This is the Automotive Repair Podcast Network.
Welcome, everyone, to yet another episode of Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z. I'm Matt Fonzel, and just when they think they have all the answers, I change the questions. That and more after a word from our sponsors, Autel, Pico Technology, and Independent Wrench Jobs. Tired of guesswork in your auto diagnostics? Need to pinpoint faults quickly and accurately? PicoScope will turn your PC into a powerful diagnostic tool. See live waveforms from sensors, injectors, and ignition systems. See the problem? Solve it faster. Visit PicoAuto.com. That's PicoAuto.com. Autel delivers award-winning automotive diagnostic tools trusted by technicians across North America. Backed by Autel North America experts in sales, training, and technical support. From drivability diagnostics and TPMS service to ADAS and advanced safety systems, Autel helps technicians follow OEM procedures and repair with confidence. Learn more at Autel.com. Sponsored by Independent Wrench Jobs, tech-only jobs, no runaround. Built by Technician Find, helping tech since 2017. Join free at IndependentWrenchJobs.com. So I thought I'd tell you this story about, I would say, a vehicle, less of the vehicle than the customer interaction, but a little bit about the vehicle. I don't know, good, bad, or otherwise. I get a fair number of phone calls about vehicles. Namely, do I think I can work on them? So they're on to me. They know I don't know what I'm doing. But really, a lot of times it's they've been to independent shops, particularly, you know, through the diagnostic process or during the repair process, it gets mentioned that we can't do something. The shop can't do something because the OEs are blocking them, or they don't have this special tool. They can't afford it, whatever. You could take it to the dealer, or you could take it to Matt or Riverside Automotive, something like that. And then sometimes I get calls on older vehicles, particularly OBD1. Where I think what happens, and I could be wrong, this is just something I've kind of made up that makes sense, so I'm going with it. Just kidding, kind of. It does make sense to me. OBD1 vehicle rolls in. The shop used to have a snap-on, particularly a snap-on in the shop that would talk to the vehicle, if you will, because they had the connector set. They may have a different snap-on scan tool. And I say snap-on because it's usually the case, right? A lot of shops primarily have snap-on, and that's not a bash. It's what it is. Should they have other scan tools laying around? Absolutely. Absolutely. That's really not what I'm going after. What I'm going after is what happens, I think. We'll just say for grins, for the sake of discussion, they had one of the older Soluses. And the new Solus Pro comes out, or maybe the Solus Edge or a Modus, you know, the newer Modus with the two-channel lab scope, something like that, Apollo. Okay, you know, Snap-on may have a deal where if you trade it in, that you'll get updates or something, where it's almost to the point where it's becomes close enough that it is less expensive to buy the new Snap-on product or a new Snap-on product than it is to update the old one. Okay. So they do it. They trade everything in, right? The scan tool, the connector set, everything. And in turn, they get a bag, essentially, right? The black bag with the new scan tool in there and an OBD2 cable. Nothing else. I think that's what happens. I think it's on accident. I don't think, you know, the truck dealer, I don't think they're out to scam anybody. Nobody thinks about it. Because the vast majority, at least maybe up here in the north, that gets to be where you just don't see the OBD1 vehicles. Not consistently. I would argue the shop I work at, Riverside, we do. But we also have the reputation of having the tools to do it. In this case, whatever shop was working on this vehicle didn't. And they did what they could. So, without further ado, it was a 1994, it still is technically, 1994, Chevy Corvette. So the customer calls up and they're like, hey, can you test the computer on my car? And that's kind of where the story I'm going to loop back to that. I hear that. I'm like, hey, I got this scan tool to talk to that. I have the Tech One. I don't tell the customer this, but I have the Tech One. I have the Master Tech. I have Snap-on, Graphing Red Brick. I think my Autel, one of the Autels will talk to it. Topdons will talk to it. No problem. I'm not worried. Whatever. Talk to the service advisor and they make a schedule. They get it scheduled in and they drop it off. They want me to come look at it with them for the walkthrough, and it's built. It's been messed with. I don't know about you guys, but I hate that. I don't know. I've never gotten into the performance stuff. Don't get me wrong. Like, I enjoy watching racing and truck pulls and tractor pulls and, you know, hill climbs, stuff like that. But working on performance vehicles has never been my thing. I really did my high school, or, you know, after I got my driver's license, I wasn't working on my car to make it faster or more powerful or anything like that. I just didn't care. It didn't mean that much to me. In college, I never got into it. We didn't really have a performance section, if you will. I think some programs have a, you know, whatever it is, a few weeks of engine performance, like for, you know, racing or power making, stuff like that, that they're into that. None of the programs I went to had that, and it's just never my thing. Unfortunately, sometimes it's when vehicles get dropped off like that, and I think it's a me problem. It's hard for me to just ignore it or just forget about it and not get focused on it. You know, already, assuming isn't quite the right word, but leaning already more towards something to do with the performance aspect of whatever they did. And it probably stems back to a shop I really first worked at and really got to focus on diagnostics and drivability, particularly that this Ford pickup destroyed me. I'll try to remember. I believe I am almost positive now. It was a 1991 Ford F-150 with a 5.0 liter. It was not the 5.0 liter. If you let it idle for a while, warmed up particularly, it would just start surging aggressively. Just like this, ruh, 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 ruh. Unbelievable. And then it would stop. And then it would do it again. And I could make it stop by manipulating the map sensor. Like if I fed it just a steady vacuum from like a vacuum pump, it idles smooth all day. Come to find out, the customer had put a performance camshaft in it. I had no idea. And it wasn't so aggressive that it had like this big loping idle, but it was enough to mess with it. This car destroyed me. I just could not figure it out. I didn't know. And I finally, almost out of frustration, said that, you know, it had to do something with engine vacuum, obviously. And this is before I had, and really, I don't recall. I suppose if I had an SEA machine, they would have had a vacuum transducer. Would I have seen it with that? I don't know. I doubt it. Even if I could have, would I have been able to see it at that time? I don't trust that. But almost out of frustration, I had said something like engine mechanical, like we need to pull the engine apart or put a different engine in it. And then the customer elected to tell us that they had put a performance camshaft in it. And when they went back to the stock cam, luckily, all the drivability symptoms went away, the complaints. So it's that probably have like micro traumas from that experience. But get to this 94 Corvette. The complaint is that it backfires and hesitates and cuts out going down the highway under light loads. A lot of times if you really get on it, it seems to be fine. If you're just cruising around town, seems to be fine. But just getting out on the highway, 60, 65 miles an hour, light tip in, like you're kind of past somebody in front of you, it would start cutting out, backfiring, popping. And evidently, it had everything but the kitchen sink thrown at it. And the shop that had looked at this had determined that it had to be internal to the engine control module. And actually, in this, it was a powertrain control module, PCM, that they couldn't do this work to the engine control or PCM, so it needed to go elsewhere. Sounds like they called around, somehow got my name, and didn't tell me it was a performance vehicle, but they drop it off, give me the walkthrough. I don't know. If I had any brains at all, I probably would have kicked it away, but I'm not that bright. So take it on, go drive it, verify the complaint. And even a couple of times when I really got on it, it would cut out really bad. Sets a DTC 42. Some of you will be very familiar with that. Some of you will be like, what does that even mean? Has to do with EST. So this is an interesting vehicle. It's a 1994 OBD1, but it had an OBD2 connector, but it was not wired for OBD2 in the least. It was absolutely an OBD1 vehicle. And right on the PCM had the sticker for the shop or performance tuner that had tuned this module. Unfortunately, they're no longer in existence. I'm kind of thinking, you know, what does a corrupt tune look like? It sounds like this thing was sitting. Did they jump it? Did that corrupt the tune? Could you corrupt the tune? I had this one car a while ago that had a corrupt tune, and it was a Mitsubishi. They had a tablet. It was a no start, actually. You know, after covering all the basics, I found the company that did the tuning. They had me send them the tune, and they said they had never seen a tune so corrupt in their life. Sent me a new tune, uploaded it. Car popped right off. Runs on E85. This is not the case with this vehicle. But again, that's in the back of my head. Is it possible that the tune in this thing is corrupt? Is it even possible? Am I overthinking it? But, you know, clear codes, drive it every time, sets 42. So this has to do with electronic spark timing. This is also an OptiSpark. So the distributor, which is it really technically a distributor? Could you make the argument it's a high voltage switch? Maybe, I suppose. But regardless, the distributor, along with the optical position sensors in it, are relatively easy to scope. So why not? You know, I'm setting DTCs every time. Let me scope it quick. And I really can't see anything wrong with it. Honestly, you know, when I tell you what was wrong with the vehicle, which will not impress you, but I really didn't see like reflections of it, which kind of surprised me. I went back and looked because it's kind of like, I think I should have seen this, but it was not there. And yeah, Justin, I made sure I didn't have filtering on. I don't really filter ever. My scope or my mouth, but didn't really see evidence for the 42, which then again, kind of has me leaning back, looking at the PCM, like, do I got some weird timing map thing going on? And again, not trying to get like overthink it. Testing power feeding grounds, tap testing. It's hard for me to get to the PCM. Like, I think this is something else. And honestly, I go out for a drive and I don't hammer on it. Like, I just really am just putzing with it at highway speeds, like driving it as if it's just a sedan or I guess a coupe, not a performance vehicle. And I mean, I've got it backfiring and popping, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, this just feels like ignition. And I don't mean like ignition really vague. I should be even more specific. This feels like secondary leakage. I'm going to steal a line from John Thornton, believe it or not. This is the first one I ever heard say it. Like, I knew what he meant when he said it, but I laughed. It smelled like ignition. It smelled like an ignition problem, even going down the highway. Is your shop ready for the electric vehicle revolution? Don't get left behind. The Picoscope EV Kit is your all-in-one solution. Diagnose any electric or hybrid vehicle, from high-voltage batteries to complex communication systems. With guided tests and pinpoint accuracy, you'll tackle more jobs and boost your bottom line. This isn't just a tool. It's your future. Be the expert in EV repair. Visit PicoAuto.com to future-proof your shop today. That's PicoAuto.com. This episode of Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z is brought to you by Autel. Autel is a global developer and manufacturer of award-winning professional automotive diagnostic tools and service equipment, trusted by technicians, educators, and shop owners across North America. With diagnostics at their core, Autel's real-world solutions support repair workflows ranging from full-system vehicle diagnostics to servicing the most advanced automotive technologies. What sets Autel North America apart is the team behind the tools. dedicated experts across sales, training, and technical support, each bringing deep, hands-on experience supporting professional technicians. When questions arise, you're working with people who understand the vehicles, the procedures, and the real-world demands of modern repair. Whether diagnosing complex drivability concerns, servicing TPMS systems, validating repairs, or working with ADOS and advanced safety technologies, Autel tools are engineered to support accurate, efficient repairs in strict accordance with OEM procedures and standards. To learn more about Autel and their diagnostic solutions, visit autel.com, AUTEL.com. Ever feel like you've got to play politics just to get fed? One guy gets the gravy, you get the garbage, and then the ad says, great culture. Independent Wrench Jobs is a new tech-only community to help you find better independent shops, fair dispatch, steady work, real leadership, no games. Start with the free salary survey for your city, shop-by-shop pay, perks, and benefits before you waste another interview. And if you're applying now, use Autotech Resume Pro to generate a resume and shop-specific cover letter in about 2 minutes. Built by Technician Find, serving the industry since 2017. Join free at independentwrenchjobs.com. So get back to the shop. I'm thinking about scoping it, but honestly, I take a spray bottle with a little bit of, well, it's water and then like a couple drops of Dawn just so I don't soak it. I just try to get a really good mist going as best I can to, you know, vaporize or atomize the water or the spray kind of around the plug wires. And I get that thing arcing everywhere, like right down the sides of the spark plugs. It turned the lights off in the shop just to show the light show. Customer stops into the shop because I called with the news. And I kid you not, they are shaking in frustration and anger. Their body's shaking, their hands are shaking, their lips are shaking. So in front of the service advisors and a couple of customers, this guy just lights me up because he asked me to work on his computer. He didn't ask me to do anything else. So now I'm not doing what he wanted. He's not paying me for what I did. You were out there under the hood with me with that vehicle, and I asked you if you could test my computer, and you said yes. When I heard you can test my computer, I heard hook a scan tool up to it and figure out why the thing doesn't run right. That is not what he meant. He meant take that thing apart and figure out what's wrong with the computer. Well, all of you know right off the bat, that is way over my pay grade. But I apologized. I explained the misunderstanding. He didn't really care. It was very, very little sympathy. Very little. And I do not have a simulator. I've thought about getting one or two or three different ones. I have sensor simulators, but I don't have like a module level simulator. It's really intriguing to get one. But yeah, I did not get one for this case. He spent a lot of money with this other shop to tell him that it needed a computer and he needed me to look at it and figure out what was wrong with it and fix it. I learned that, one, the tuning softwares I have, and I have a few, do not go that far back. Two, I found a place that does have a tuner for that vintage of a Corvette and a fair number of GM vehicles, and calling them, I learned that the company that is no longer around that did the tuning on that engine powertrain control module, in fact, at least owned this tuner from them. So I bought everything. I bought as much stuff as they had. I bought it all. And you guys might be wondering why. Like, because I don't tune vehicles. I have no interest in tuning vehicles. If I'm going to tune vehicles, I need to have a dyno and it's got to be all set up. And then I'm going to go to a lot of school to learn what the hell I'm doing, which doesn't explain anything else I'm doing because I don't know what the hell I'm doing. Well, anyways, I just don't see a dyno. I just don't see that in the near future. And honestly, I don't know what I would do with it short of, I guess it'd be kind of cool for certain drivability issues that occur going down the highway. But what would be really cool is having a dyno that lets me put the vehicle on there, all four wheels could be driving or not, or it would drive them to some degree to allow us to test vehicles as if they're going down the road for noise, vibration, harshness, noises, clunks, all the things. Have it up on a hoist of some sort. We can get under it relatively safely. Safely if you use your damn head and find problems. That would be cool. I don't think those are really set up for horsepower. Like, not a lot. You're probably not going to put a 500 horsepower or 1,000 horsepower vehicle on, engine vehicle, I guess, on there. Most likely. I have tuning software for certain specific situations, such as during COVID, the GM dealers were sending me vehicles to disable active fuel management because they did not have access to active fuel management engine blocks for the issues they were having. So they got an okay to have stuff disabled. Some of you that install, I think, Jasper engines know that you can, like, there's a certain authorization where it's no longer considered emissions tampering. Otherwise, I wouldn't do it. That's the biggest reason. The other reason is I've been burned multiple times where somebody has a tuned vehicle, the engine module legitimately goes bad. All I can do is program it with OE software, which I get. That's kind of their problem, but it's nice in certain situations where I can just pull the freaking tune out of it, read it, if you will, read the tune, save it, put the new engine module in, program it with the tune. It's what they had before. That's one of the big reasons. And then there's a few certain situations where immobilizer parts are no longer available or very difficult to source on certain vehicles. So with a lot of authorizations and understanding, disabling immobilizer, because otherwise there's really no long-term fix, and short-term can get sketch. There's a lot of issues where if you put them into like a fail enable type of situation where that it still runs, lights on, battery goes dead, you're SOL, and you have to put it back into fail enable. That's basically why I have them, and that's why I got this tuning software, is so that I could read the tune, and if I needed to put a new module in it, even just to satisfy the client, I could upload the tune back to it. Anyways, I pulled the module apart, and I look at, under my microscope, any signs of issues. I don't see any, you know, inputs, outputs as best I can, sensor simulating as best I can. Like, I can find nothing wrong with this module. So I finally call the customer and I'm like, I don't see any issue with this, but I think I know what's wrong with it. Please just let me fix your car. Let's see if I can fix your car first, and then we'll worry about what it is. And with some reluctance, he says, okay. The fix ended up being spark plugs and wires. One, the spark plugs that were put in it weren't technically correct. If you looked the car up by year, make, and model, they had the right spark plugs in it. If you knew what the cylinder heads were on it, though, they weren't actually the correct spark plugs. I don't think that was the reason. I'm not trying to imply that that was the reason this car ran bad. It was the arcing and then spark plug wires. That was between the spark plugs and spark plug wires. I couldn't really see signs of cracking or carbon tracking, but I knew you wouldn't be impressed with that, nor should you be. But that's what fixed the car. We put that stuff all in there. The car screams. I get why he likes it. Yeah. So I called him up and I'm trying to explain what's wrong, why, all that. And he just seems really upset. And then I told him, I think you're going to be very happy with the way this thing runs. And then it didn't really seem to matter what I said anymore, in a good way. Like, it just seemed like all the stress went away. All that stress, all that anxiety had gone. So he shows up, drives it, extraordinarily happy. And then we have to hit him with the bill. It would have been, you know, not so bad. I mean, it would have been a couple hours of diag involved. Part of it also just to, I don't know if honor is the right word, but keep in mind like the scanner danner type of angle where these problem child vehicles, we got to kind of demand a certain amount of money. And I'm not against that at all. I shouldn't even phrase it with that like that. I'm all for that. It's been elsewhere. They couldn't figure it out. I don't know what I'm getting into. So it would have been at just that amount plus the repair, but because of their, I think, fear, right? Fear, anxiety, feeling not listened to, feeling taken advantage of, because It was just an honest misunderstanding. Can you test my computer? I got a level with you. I've been asked that before. This never occurred to me to be like very specific in that language of, I'm not actually testing your computer per se. Like, I'm not putting it on some sort of a test bench and running it through a battery of tests. Never thought of that. Never once occurred to me. Now it occurs to me, like, okay, they had an idea of what I was doing and I had an idea of what they meant and they conflicted. I had an idea for an episode once about expectations. Expectations lead to like car crashes. You know what I mean? Like fender benders, sometimes more severe. But, you know, there's the taxi company with the autonomous taxis in Arizona primarily. I think it's Waymo. That I think it's been quite a few miles, hours, where the taxis themselves have not been responsible for a collision. However, they're involved in a lot of little fender benders where they get rear-ended. The reason being is human drivers behind them do not expect them to stop at a stop sign where they're supposed to stop, wait 2 seconds, and then proceed. They expect them to rolling stop. And when those expectations aren't met, boom, fender bender. In this case, he had expectations. I had expectations. They weren't the same, and we had a fender bender. Yeah, the moral of the story, I guess we have to expand our curiosity. I wish I would have thought, could you please clarify what you mean by that? It didn't even occur to me to ask, what do you mean by that? When you ask me to test your computer, please, could you elaborate? I want to make sure I understand you. And that never once occurred to me, not even a little bit. And it kind of led to a misunderstanding that got really, really dicey. Now that the car is running good, there's apologies, there's good reviews, all the things. But yeah, it was really, really tense. And I don't think I acted defensive, but I was feeling very, very, very defensive because it's like, why would I think that? But that's really not for me to decide, right? Because it isn't me asking, it's him. And I'm there to serve him. I'm electing to. So I needed to ask better questions and just be curious. What do you mean by that? That's my story. The car runs really good. Haven't seen it back yet. If I would have known it was a performance vehicle, would I have still taken it on? I don't know. Probably. But if it got into the like the performance type parts, then I don't know. Not overly comfortable with it. Although I guess I do understand that they're just parts, right? You know, they're going to cause certain things when they fail. The car ran good before. So there is a problem and I can probably work my way to the cause. It just complicates matters with the tune and just lack of familiarity. We don't see a lot of it and I shy away from it. And we certainly don't do actual performance builds. I hope you got a kick out of that. Thank you so very much to our sponsors, Autel, Pico Technology, and Independent Wrench Jobs. Thank you so much for listening. If you're on YouTube, give the video a like. It helps out immensely. And subscribe if you want to keep hearing or seeing more of these. You know, let me know down in the comments of weird problems you've run into with performance vehicles or customers and misunderstandings and honest misunderstandings. I'm not looking to throw anyone under the bus. We can have an honest misunderstanding and no one's really the bad guy or is ignorant by any means. Yeah, I look forward to the comments. If you have ideas for the podcast, questions, topic ideas, want to be on the podcast, please don't hesitate to email me at mattfonzelpodcast@gmail.com. And thank you to the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. And until next time, take care.
You've been listening to Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z with Matt Fonslow on the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. Download our exclusive podcast app at automotiverepairpodcastnetwork.com because the best conversations in the industry start here. Want Matt to cover a specific topic? Check the show notes for his email. Your input matters.